Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yeah, so today we're reading from the last chapter of this section on the Leela of Lord Narasimhadev and Prahlad Maharaj's teachings. And we're up to text number 11. Let's read text number 10 again. O my Lord, Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Purushaya Mahatmane Hare Jutta Simmaya Brahmane Paramatmane. I am a Lord full of six opulences, O Supreme Person. O Supreme Soul, killer of all miseries, O Supreme Person in the form of a wonderful lion and man, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So in the previous verse, Prahlad Maharaj has explained that a devotee can achieve the platform of Bhagavatva, being as good as the Supreme Person. But this does not mean that a devotee loses his position as a servant. A pure servant of the Lord, although as opulent as the Lord, is still meant to offer respectful obeisances to the Lord in service. Prahlad Maharaj was engaged in pacifying the Lord, and therefore he did not consider himself equal to the Lord. He defined his position as a servant and offered respectful obeisances unto the Lord. Text number 11. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Naikantino Mi Mae Jatvihashiva Shisha Sasate Muchachaye Bhavadvidha Tatapi Manvantaram Mitadacha Tachyeshvaranam Manu Bungshvabogan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narasimha, said, my dear Prahlad, a devotee like you never desires any kind of material opulences, either in this life or in the next. Nonetheless, I order you to enjoy the opulence of the demons in this material world, acting as their king until the end of the duration of time occupied by Manu. One Manu lives for a duration of time calculated to be an aggregate of 71 yuga cycles, each of which equals 4,300,000 years. Although atheistic men like to enjoy material opulences and they endeavour with great energy to build big residences, roads, cities and factories, unfortunately, they cannot live for more than 80, 90, or for the utmost 100 years. Although the materialist exerts so much energy to create a kingdom of hallucinations, he is unable to enjoy it for more than a few years. However, because Prahlad Maharaj was a devotee, the Lord allowed him to enjoy material opulence as the king of the materialists. Prahlad Maharaj had taken his birth in the family of Hiranyakashipu, who was the topmost materialist, and since Prahlad was the bona fide heir of his father, the Supreme Lord allowed him to enjoy the kingdom created by his father for so many years that no materialist could calculate them. A devotee does not have to desire material opulence, but if he is a pure devotee, there is ample opportunity for him to enjoy material happiness also without personal endeavour. Therefore, everyone is advised to take to devotional service under all circumstances. If one desires material opulence, he can also become a pure devotee and his desires will be fulfilled. As stated in Bhagavatam 2.3.10, whether one desires everything or nothing, or whether he desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna, the Supreme Person of Godhead, by rendering transcendental loving service. So, Prahlad Maharaj became king of the materialists, ruling over the materialists. Verse 12. It does not matter that you are in the material world. You should always continuously hear the instructions and messages given by me and always be absorbed in thought of me. For I am the super soul existing in the core of everyone's heart. Therefore, give up fruit of activities and worship me. Purport. When a devotee becomes materially very opulent, one should not think that he is enjoying the results of his fruitive activities. A devotee in this material world uses all material opulences for the service of the Lord because he is planning how to serve the Lord with these opulences, as advised by the Lord himself. Whatever material opulence is within his possession, he engages to expand the glories and service of the Lord. A devotee never performs any fruitive or ritualistic ceremony to enjoy the results of such karma. Rather, the devotee knows that karma kanda is meant for the less intelligent man. Narottam Das Thakur says in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, karma kanda, jnana kanda, kevala vishera banda. Both karma kanda and jnana kanda, fruitive activities and speculation about the Supreme Lord, are like pots of poison. One who is attracted to karma kanda and jnana kanda spoils his existence as a human being. Therefore, a devotee is never interested in karma kanda or jnana kanda, but is simply interested in favourable service to the Lord and akulyana krishna nushilanam, or cultivation of spiritual activities in devotional service. My dear Prahlad, this is the text 13. My dear Prahlad.
I just didn't understand why Lord Narasimha is saying to the Lord Maharaj to give up fruitive activities. So what is he trying to say? I don't think it's implying or specific to Prahlad Maharaj to give up fruitive activities. He's a pure devotee.
Yes, he is a pure devotee. Let's investigate that a little further. So, this is how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that verse. He says, continuously hearing topics about me and always being absorbed in me in your mind, worship me, the Lord of Sacrifice, situated in all beings, by Bhakti Yoga, while giving up Karma Yoga. So, in his commentary, he says, Because of what offence are you throwing me in the hole of material life? You know, as if Prahlad is asking that question, you know. So the Lord responds, worship me, the Lord of sacrifices, by Bhakti Yoga. By this, all sacrifices will be performed without doing horse sacrifices, etc. Give up all karmas, Vedic and secular, since the person qualified for bhakti should not do karmas. So, you know, he's saying, you know, he's giving him the benediction. He's ordering him, you know, you reside amongst the materialists as their king in the material world. One might expect that, you know, he's get the benediction of, you know, okay, we'll take you out of the association of the demons and the materialists and place you amongst the devotees with Narada Muni and so many personalities, and there you'll be able to hear and chant and do sankirtan, so many things. So, you know, it's almost an unexpected benediction for a devotee. But he's saying that because he's only has to be situated, he only within that situation, he's not expected to do what materialists would be expected. You know, a king is meant to perform all sorts of, you know, Vedic rituals from Jnana Kanda and Karma Kanda on behalf of the welfare of the citizens and for their own purification and what have you. But he's saying, you know, so although you're in that position, you don't have to do all the usual activities that a king would do. You know, you just take the bhakti portion and that's sufficient, you know. So, you know, it's similar to, you know, our position within, you know, we're actually, you know, we come in the line of Madhvacharya. And Madhvacharya suggested to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, well, Madhvacharya's followers suggested to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that the way of perfection is to strictly follow the Devi Varnashram, you know, whilst coming to assist in the coming to the perfection of Bhakti Yoga, and then achieving the goal of life, going back to Godhead, liberation. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected that although we follow the teachings of Madhvacharya, we don't accept that we have to perform the Karma Kanda or Jnana Kanda sections of the Vedas. We only have to engage, as Prahlad did, in hearing and chanting. So even that's our spiritual master, you know, he's the great Acharya of the Brahma Sampradaya. Still Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving a similar... Yes, you can be in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya, but you don't have to follow where they still followed some, you know, Karma Kanda or Jnana Kanda as a way of purification. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that, you know, at this stage of Kali Yuga, they're to be put aside. You know, in the time of Madhvacharya, still the Vedic civilization in India was somewhat, you know, there may have been some little semblance, people following Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. But you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later, so, you know, it's about 500 years later or something, he's then suggesting that, you know, there's no longer any need to follow those Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda. Even we're coming in the line of Madhvacharya. So we can be situated in his line, accept him as our guru, and yet not have to follow everything that we ordinarily would have to. So, you know, Prahlad's like that. You'd be situated in the material world. Ordinarily, there are things that a king must do, but he's saying, but you don't have to follow those portions. You know, you can give them up. You can reject them. Not saying that, you know, you have desires for them, you should try and purify yourself in that sense. It's you know, they can be rejected, yeah.
I just want to add a point. Mm. In the Vedic instruction, always there is a positive and a negative. Mm. It'll say, always think of Krishna. That's enough, no? Mm. Never forget him.
Mm.
Take up the association of devotees. Don't take up the association of non-devotees. Like that. Always a negative and positive is given.
Mm.
So in that also, the Lord is following the same thing. He's saying, do my service, don't take up karma yoga.
In one sense, but in another sense, as a king who is ruling over materialists who want karmakanda and jnanakanda from their king, wouldn't they? They'd be wanting that. Well, you're our king, you know, where's our karmakanda ceremonies and jnanakanda and so many things? But he's saying he's not obligated. He can reject them. He can give that portion of kingly duties up. You know, as he's only attracted to hearing and chanting, then the Lord has actually fulfilled his desire. You only want to engage in pure devotional service, so although you're the king, you only have to do that still. That. So, yeah. So, and as Vishwanath Chakravarti the course says also, and that Srila Prabhupada quoting from Narottam Das Thakur, you know, being interested in, you know, favourable service to the Lord, pure devotional service, you know, you know, one qualified for bhakti should not do karmas, jnanakanda, karmakanda. One should not do those. You know, as brahmanas, you know, also. Sometimes our congregation, I get this a lot where, you know, the congregation members, you know, want me to perform some particular something from karmakanda, jnanakanda. And, you know, I'm not obliged to do them. although I'm a priest. You know, if I detect that something is, you know, karmakanda, jnanakanda, I'm not obliged to do them. In fact, I'm advised, please don't do them. it would be detrimental to my devotional service. You know, Srila Prabhupada, you know, mentioned, you know, so therefore, for instance, sometimes, so we do weddings, you know, so in our weddings we always get the blessings of Krishna. But sometimes they're wanting me to get the blessings of Ganesh as a demigod, or other personalities, Shiva or Durga, as advised by karmakanda and what have you, but I won't do that. But you know, I'm not obliged to do that. I'm not obliged to do it to increase the finances of the temple. I'm not obliged to do it at all for any reason, because it's detrimental to bhakti. So I don't do it. But there are ways that things can be done. You know, if someone wants me to include the worship of Durga, if they want me to do that, and they don't understand Krishna, then you know, I will explain to them. I'll sit down there and talk to them for half an hour until they understand that the proper system is that you worship Krishna, and then the paraphernalia with you worship Krishna can then be used to worship Durga. You know, the prasadam. You know, in other words, if you offer a ghee lamp to Krishna, then you finish your worship. You know, and you can offer even to Srila Prabhupada. That prasadam can also be offered to the demigods. And you can accept that prasadam. Prabhupada says that in his lectures. You can, even you offer food to Krishna and you know, acharyas, and then you can offer that same prasad to worship Durga. You can eat that food. That's not eating Durga prasad, that's eating Krishna prasad. So, but if they ask me to, you know, worship Durga as part of the Karma Kanda, you know, then I won't do that. Unless it can be, you know, done in such a way that we're actually doing our bhakti, then I won't do it. We shouldn't do it. So, you know, so in a similar way, you know, Prahlad Maharaj would have to make sure that, you know, he himself doesn't involve himself in those things, and where he may be somehow engaged with the different personalities who may be assisting him in ruling over the kingdom, and they may, one of the ministers say, oh, can you do a wedding for my, can you bless my daughter or what have you in a wedding? So, you know, he would then explain to them, well then, you know, this is the way we do it, so that, you know, it's actually done in the way of bhakti. I can do that for you, but I don't have to, you know, do other things. So, he's not obliged. So, you know, we would get the same, you know, instruction. You know, if Prabhupada is a pure devotee of the Lord, came to the West, he also took part in, you know, performing weddings and what have you. But as advised by his spiritual master, that you know, he would give up the fruit of activities and just worship Krishna, which he did. So it's not as if Prabhupada wanted that, but. So these are it's just the directions of the acharyas being repeated, you know, that we should not engage ourselves in these pots of poise in Gaunakanda and Karmakanda. We, you know, many different ways that's given. Reject them, and this is the same instruction by the Lord, reject those sins. Yet, we might be in a position as a king or as a priest or a family member where people may expect that we are somehow obliged to engage in those things. But Lord, you know, we understand from Lord Narasimha, from Lord Krishna, we are not obliged. We must give them up. And he's given us the blessings that there is no, discrepancy in our duties, or our roles, and our responsible roles as parents, as brahmanas, as leaders, or anything in giving that. There's no discrepancy for us to do that. We can do that. So we give, you know, it's like he's given permission, just to make sure, just to clarify, really. Yeah. It's not a reflection on Prahlad having those desires. Yeah. But, you know, it's it's something that, you know, devotees, can struggle with. You know, I think I got a bad reputation, you know, I mentioned that story, for being a Durga worshipper. You know, I did a wedding and, you know, I told you that story? Yeah. I did a wedding at the farm and they were all Durga worshippers. Yeah, a lot of Indian community up that way. And they chose the day of Durga Puja to do the wedding, because, well, you know, there's a lot of various wishes. So I'm doing their wedding. I know that they're all Durga worshippers. I know it's Durga Puja. And it would sort of be insulting for me not to say something about Durga, just to, you know, it's Krishna this, Krishna that, and they're thinking, oh, we wanted a blessing, you know. He hasn't even mentioned Durga, you know. So, you know, last time we go to the Hare Krishna temple, you know, there's no blessing there. It's Krishna this, Krishna that. So, you know, when I lit the sacred fire, I explained to them that, you know, in Krishna's pastime, Durga is his sister. So, they're related, a brother and sister. We generally worship the brother, Krishna, first in Vedic situation, and then we worship the Shakti next. And always understand that, you know, Durga Devi is the personification of Krishna's material energy, which he says in the Gita, and that she engages eternally in his service. Like that. So that's how I explained it. So it took me about that long, probably 30 seconds tops. So I said, now I'll do the worship of Krishna. So one of the devotees, she was a wedding coordinator, she was in the audience, and she saw me doing the worship, and she's, you know, thought, he's worshipping Durga. So, I, you know, maybe she didn't even hear what I said or what have you, but, you know, she just heard Durga, probably. I don't know what she, where she was, where her head was. I still don't know. But anyway, she reported that to the temple president here, who sent me an email. What's this about you doing Durga Puja at the wedding? So I sent back a reply that, you know, I'm really shocked, you know, that after nearly 40 years in devotional service, you'd actually think that I'm a Durga, a devotee of Durga. I'm shocked that you don't know I'm a devotee of Krishna. And I didn't really respond to it. You know, what's this about you worshipping Durga? It's like, you know, don't send me any more of your stupid emails and don't think I'm a Durga worshipper, you know. So I, basically that was the tone of, I think, you know, I'm just shocked that it even come to this, you know. So anyway, that person was not censured by the temple management, and for months and months, and probably to this day, still tells people that I'm a Durga worshipper. It's very hard for devotees, sometimes if they see a devotee amongst, you know, Karmakandis or Gyanakandis, and you're involved in a ritual with you, they can't separate. Oh, you know, this devotee, they're all Durga worthy. What's he even doing that ceremony for? So they can't understand what you would be doing, you see. As I said, I know full well that I have no interest in Karmakanda or Gyanakanda, because I've been reading Narottam Das Thakur's prayers for 40 years, and I know they're pots of poison. I have no inclination to perform those activities, and by understanding how Prabhupada dealt with these situations, I know that we can perform our duties and leave that part aside, and actually in a preaching context people can be very satisfied. But we still have to be very respectful to people, you know, who are engaged in Karmakanda and Gyanakanda, that if they're following Vedic principles and worshipping demigods, you know, but they don't know about the transcendental glories of Krishna, as we don't disrespect any religious, we're not supposed to be disrespectful to other religions, which are bona fide religions, even though they may not necessarily be on the platform of pure bhakti. It's actually offensive for us to be disrespectful to those persons and the bona fide religions, you know, of Christianity or the Vedas or Muslim or, you know, Buddhism. And so, for instance, in India, when Srila Prabhupada one time, they were doing Harinam, and they got such a wonderful reception, and the people were just so happy with the devotees, and they invited Prabhupada in, you know, to the Durga temple, you know, can you come in and, you know, offer your respects to Durga, you know, come in, you know. So it's sort of, again, Prabhupada immediately understood, these people have, you know, just, they're practically running around touching the feet of all the Western devotees and what have you. Why should we, you know, at the end, you know, give the impression that we're disrespecting them because they're worshiping, you know, no, we're not coming into your temple. We go into your temple, you know. You know, we look down on people like you. You know, the devotee doesn't like to give that, you know, insult. So Prabhupada very happily agreed to go into the Durga temple, and he went in there and he said to his disciples, a few of them followed him, just do as I do. And he went in and he offered his obeisances, apparently to Durga Devi, and they come out and the disciples, Prabhupada was shocked, you know, Prabhupada, you know, we saw you offering your obeisances to Durga Devi. He said, yeah, actually, he said, when we pay our obeisances to Krishna, you know, then our spiritual master is in front of us, our Lord is on the left, and then others, some of the demigods, etc., on the right. So when he paid his obeisances, actually, he was considering that the Lord is always on my left, Krishna is always there, my Guru is always in front of me. There's Durga Devi on the altar. He's paying his obeisances actually within his heart to Krishna and his spiritual master. And then, you know, whatever prayer he offers to Durga Devi, you know, may you not put obstacles in our Sankirtan movement. I'm sure he would have offered some prayer like that. But, so, to ordinary eyes, it looks like he just went in there and paid his obeisances to Durga. But he didn't. He just did what he always does. I sometimes do that, you know. Sometimes people insist, oh, can I, you know, put this picture of Durga on your altar, you know, because I set up my altar. They put it on and then they ask me. I say, yeah, sure. And because they want me to worship Durga. Sometimes I've had Kali Bhairava, you know, it's that form of Shiva, you know, very, you know. And so, you know, I just always worship Krishna as I usually do. And then, you know, I offer the prasad to, you know, their Durga or Ganesh, Kalagarava, who's been put it. But they don't know who I'm worshipping. They just seem to be waving something in that direction. As far as they're concerned, I'm, you know, just worshipping Kalagarava. They have no idea what I'm doing. But they're completely satisfied that I've actually satisfied their wishes to their full extent. In the same, you know, they didn't know what Prabhupada did when he offered his obeisances to Durga, but they were completely satisfied, and he wasn't about to disrespect them or cause them trouble. So, you know, for preaching, you know, we're preaching to people, you know, actually when I first started doing the yajnas, a couple of the devotees, you know, the full-time, one was a brahmachari in the ashram, and they would quite often say to me, you know, how they felt that these ceremonies were somewhat almost like a burden that they didn't want to do. And the main reason was because most of the people that they were seeing were demigod worshippers. And they really couldn't understand why they had to do that sort of stuff, which, you know, they felt they were implicated in karma kundra and gyana kundra because they were associated with those people and doing ceremonies for the people on, and they're interested in that. So because they're doing the ceremony, it's almost like, well, now I'm implicated in gyana kundra and karma kundra. And they were very disturbed. And therefore, they used to do all sorts of things, you know. The families themselves, because a lot of the families later told me, they were quite disturbed at the way they were actually treated by ISKCON. You know, and they could tell that, you know, they were really neglected in the way those ceremonies were done. And fact, the temple president here, after I was doing them for about a month or so, he came up and he said, "Ganga, what's going on?" As he usually does, and, you know, as if you're doing something wrong. I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "You know, it's like we're getting so many people want to do these ceremonies. You must be doing something right." I said, "I'm looking after them." "Oh, well, it's working." So, yes, you know, for, you know, its purpose like this, you know, where, you know, in the past in ISKCON, and still to this very day, devotees read it and saw, you know, and they, you know, unless one follows in the footsteps of a preacher like Srila Prabhupada, we really don't know how to apply it. You know, it almost, we you know, purports like this, purports like associating with women, you know, and entering into family life, and, you know, unless we understand how Prabhupada applied these in the Sankirtan movement, we can have an ISKCON which is completely different to the one that Prabhupada wanted us to have, you know. So, yeah, very interesting. So, you know, and therefore, you know, even the question you asked me, you know, if, you know, therefore give up fruit of activities and worship me. It's almost like a reflection on Prahlad Maharaj, isn't it? You know. But, you know, it's a blessing, and just clarifying. You're the king of the materialists, but you don't have to do anything in the material realm, which includes karma kanda, jnana kanda, because that's not, you know, but as a bhakti, as a pure devotee as you are, you don't have to do those. Even I've, you know, asked you to be the king of the materialists for, you know, till the end of Manu's time. You don't have to do those. So there's no, I haven't condemned you to some unfortunate situation contrary to your desires for pure devotional service. So, you know, when the as I said, when the devotees who were doing such ceremonies as you know, I had the good fortune to be doing now, obviously there was no instruction. You know, it was like, well, they want to do a ceremony out in Mount Waverley. Grab the nearest first brahmachari that looks like he doesn't have any service today, and a couple of helpers. Go and do that. And that was the department. So, you know, no wonder they had trouble. And then they're only going on by what they hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam classes in the morning. Who's preaching on these verses? So, you know, no wonder they have trouble. And this is why we're supposed to, you know, we want to do the Bhakti Vedanta and Bhakti Vaibhava. Not just to get a certificate or, you know, to rattle off a few slokas, as some do, but we actually want to understand, you know, how Prabhupada applied this in ISKCON, and how we will apply it in ISKCON for thousands of years to come. But obviously, even after, you know, the temple's been here since 1975, then we're sending people out to do a whole department of services, partly without a single proper instruction or understanding coming from anywhere. They haven't had it, they don't understand it from classes, and there's no department to deal with it. Still no department. So the result of these studies is that this knowledge ends up as being systematically taught to people who have to deal with certain things, dealing with ceremonies, dealing with women's affairs, dealing with, greenhouse life, I think. They have to, as we were discussing previously, that in a lot of temples that I've been in, it's almost like a distraction to a meeting if you actually bring the philosophy of Prabhupada's books into that meeting. It's an unwanted distraction. That's the impression that I've got over the course of time. So I think in Mayapur, instructions that Srila Prabhupada giving, form the basis of the decisions they're making, but it doesn't necessarily transpire like that in all the local temples and what have you. There's a lot of, temples in Australia, temples in different parts of the world. They're not necessarily scouring the books as the pundits do in Mayapur, and what may help them to form the GBC laws and codes of action. A lot of temples really probably don't quite even know what those GBC law book is, what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. In fact, for a lot of different discrepancies I've found when I've actually discussed the GBC law book, all parties have been completely ignorant of what was in that GBC law book as to what the proper code is and what have you. And then there's a lot of research into the Prabhupada's books as to why we have certain principles and codes of actions in all different departments. But that's not necessarily filtering through to all the local managements in ISKCON. But what what should happen is that gradually, as the community becomes properly educated, what's in Prabhupada's books, that this actually filters through as an understanding of what is there within the GBC law book, why they come to those decisions as what we can and can't do, and then how that applies in our temples and why it applies. Why is that there? Because, it's like this in the books. So that's not there, There's a big gap between what's required in ISKCON and what's actually happening like that. any further comments or questions? It's a very dangerous gap because it means that leaders can make decisions and really the congregation just has to go along with it, that they know what they're doing. That becomes a lot harder when you actually have a congregation who has many significant members who understand what Prabhupada wants, why he wants it, what's allowable, what's not allowable in the practice of pure devotional service, and how Prabhupada practically applied, that philosophy. That makes a very healthy temple. And it makes a very healthy management. It holds management accountable. Otherwise, there's no accountability. If you have a temple full of devotees who really don't know the philosophy, and why we have certain rules and regulations of what we can and can't do and, on the path of pure devotional service, and the community has no real proper understanding of that, it means that the management is not really accountable. It means even though they're GBC laws, the community never knows when they're being followed or not. So proper education, and then the other thing, of course, is that it really makes for, like, here we have say a big temple like this, and there are probably other temples. You've got a lot of preachers, a lot of people preaching. So what are they preaching?
Chant Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah, but and if someone doesn't want to chant Hare Krishna, they want to do like some ceremony or something, you say, oh, if you're not going to chant Hare Krishna, we're not interested. Go to the local Hindu temple, call them. So, you know, to have a huge amount of preachers and yet, you know, there's a significant discrepancy in their understanding of Prabhupada's books and its application, then that's another danger. So this, you know, these Bhakti Shastri, you know, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, you know, they're not just a philosophical, you know, treatise and armchair sort of philosophy, you know, that we learn them and everything just goes on the same way anyway. They're actually meant to ensure that Prabhupada, it's almost like Prabhupada is personally present. That everything that goes on in every temple goes on as if Prabhupada were personally present. And if Prabhupada were personally present and someone's called the temple and said, oh, you know, we want to do this Durga Puja temple. And the devotee on the phone says, no, not interested. You know, go to the Hindu temple down the road. What do you think Prabhupada say? He wouldn't be happy with that. So yeah, bring them. Bring them. They just preach. You know, we can give so many things we can do. We can teach them how, like that. But these books are like that. They're meant that in every temple, things are done as if Prabhupada were personally present. And that's then you've got a really a good, completely spiritual, potent, you know, preaching, preaching to people who are coming, and also the devotees themselves are actually, you know, making great spiritual, they're really situated on the spiritual platform. And that. So, so then, did we read text number 13? My dear Prahlad, while you're in this material world, you will exhaust all the reactions of pious activities by feeling happiness, and by acting piously, you will neutralize impious activity. Because of the powerful time factor, you will give up your body, but the glories of your activities will be sung in the upper planetary systems, and being fully freed from all bondage, you will return home back to Godhead. So Prabhupada says, Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti the Course says, there are two classes of devotees, the sadhana siddha and the nitya siddha. Prahlad is a mixed siddha, that is, he is perfect partly because of executing devotional service, and partly because of eternal perfection. Thus he is compared to such devotees as Narada. Formerly Narada Muni was the son of a maidservant, and therefore in his next birth he attained perfection sadhana siddhi because of having executed devotional service, yet he is also a nitya siddha because he never forgets the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word kushalina is very important. One should live in the material world very expertly. So, you know, there you see that, I'll read the rest of the purport. One should live in the material world very expertly. The material world is known as the world of duality because one sometimes has to act impiously and sometimes has to act piously. Although one does not want to act impiously, the world is so fashioned that there is always danger. Padam padam yanvi padam. Thus, even when performing devotional service, a devotee has to create many enemies. Prahlad Maharaj himself had experience of this, for even though even his father became his enemy, a devotee should expertly manage to think always of the Supreme Lord so that the reactions of suffering cannot touch him. This is the expert management of papa punya, pious and impious activities. An exalted devotee like Prahlad Maharaj is Jivan Mukta. He is liberated even in this life in the material body. I'm just going to pause it there for one moment. I'll just go to the bathroom as well. Yes. So Prabhupada has quoted Srila Vishwanathachakya Bhatti Thakur in this purport to text number 13. Very interesting, you know, purport here, so much in it. So the translation that Srila Vishwanathachakya Bhatti Thakur gives is, having given up piety by enjoyment and sinful pious activities, and having given up the previous body by the passing of time, having spread your pure glory, praised even in Svargaloka, and being already free of bondage, you will come to me. In the commentary, he says that do not be afraid of bondage by karma, by enjoyment. In your previous birth, all karmas were destroyed. By experience of enjoyment, the Prarabdha Punyas will be exhausted. By pious acts, Prarabdha sins will be exhausted. Giving up your previous body, you attain me now. You are already liberated from bondage in this life. You are Jivan Mukta. It should be understood that Prahlad, like Narada and others, was partly Sadhana Siddha and partly Nitya Siddha. Now, the footnote that Bhanuswami gives at the bottom of the page here means that this means that they are Nitya Siddha, but also take forms of sadhikas during the pastimes. That's a very important footnote. So they're actually Nitya Siddha, which Prabhupada stated very clearly in the previous verses. But they take the forms of sadhikas during the pastimes. And they've also as Prabhupada often said, that you know, sadhana siddha, nitya siddha. Sadhana siddha, one who has attained perfection on the spiritual platform by their sadhana bhakti. Nitya siddha, they've never forgotten Krishna. They haven't come to that point by sadhana. They've just never left that platform. But when they become, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, when they become siddha, then nitya siddha, they're both nitya siddha. and here also we're seeing that as described here in the footnote by Bhanuswami, that the nitya siddha may also have pastimes as a sadhaka, as if they're perfecting their sadhana towards perfection. In this case, we see that Prahlad Maharaj is already Jivan Mukta, he's already liberated in this lifetime. He's attained the personality of Godhead. As if he were still acting on the platform of a sadhaka, we can follow in his footsteps. Similarly, we follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, Nitya Siddha. But, it appeared that he took pastimes like a sadhaka, as if he was coming to perfection. And we follow Srila Prabhupada, how he went through the different stages of devotional service, apparently. We follow in his footsteps, what he did as a grihastha before he was sannyasi, and so many different things. and we follow in the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj. So, you know, one may think, well then, you know, if Prahlad is engaged in the heavenly planet, not the heavenly planets, but, you know, the leader of the materialists, as their king in the material world, how do we follow him? We can follow him as if he were a sadhika, in one sense, performing his devotional service perfectly. It's good to follow a sadhika who performs their sadhana bhakti perfectly, rather than follow a sadhika who's not performing their sadhana bhakti very well. So, you know, for us, we're not trying to imitate or try and, you know, jump up to follow the Nitya Siddhas. We really want to know how to follow the sadhikas, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to follow, be a sadhika, and follow a sadhika who did the devotional service so nicely that they became perfect. So, you know, we can follow Prahlad Maharaj. And so it's a very wonderful statements that Prabhupada summed up in just a few sentences. And Prabhupada is saying that the word Kushalina is very important. One should live in the material world very expertly. So Prahlad Maharaj is being asked to live in the material world still till the end of the Manu. That's this Manu, isn't it? Prahlad Nrisinga? No, Nrisinga. What Manu is this taking place in? Trying to remember. Of Hiranyakashipu. And then Ravana. Is this I can't remember offhand here. I'll look at that. But to the end of the manu. So Srila Prabhupada says that one should live in this material world very expertly. The material world is known as the world of duality because one sometimes has to act impiously and sometimes has to act piously. So to live in this world, you either have, you're almost like you're obliged to do the wrong thing sometimes, or to act piously, which again is... we don't want to act piously or impiously. We don't want to do any material activities. Although one does not want to act impiously, the world is so fashioned that there is always danger. Thus, even when performing devotional service, a devotee has to create many enemies. You know, here we see that... you know, Prahlad Maharaj had to reject the teachings of the guru, you know, was it Sukracharya? Sukracharya, the... what's that?
Skanda and Amag, his future
sex. Skanda and Amag, yeah, Skanda and Amag. Yeah. And, he's rejecting the teachings of his father. He's created a lot of enemies because he's, in one sense, it would be considered impious. He doesn't want to act impiously. In one sense, he's acted impiously by being disrespectful to his father and to his teachers and to the gurus. In another sense, he's been forced to... they're wanting him to act impiously and he doesn't want to. You know, they're saying to Prahlad, you should you know, learn how to become, you know, very fulfill your material desires, you know, by hook or by crook or whatever like that, and, you know, how to, you know, rule the kingdom, to, you know, divide and rule, and, you know, you do this with your enemy, and like some, you know, in which case there's some, he's being asked to do things which are impious, and by not doing that, he's becoming, you know, he became the enemy. Oh, I'm not going to do that. Just like, you know, Prabhupada mentions, who was it? Was it Gargamuni, one of his disciples? His father said, "You come home from the Hare Krishna movement and I will give you my business. I will hand it over to you," which was like a million dollar bill. So Prabhupada said, you know, for the sake of ISKCON, like, you know, if you're going to, you know, somehow take this business and so much money can be channeled into ISKCON, do it. You know, he said, go home to your father. So when he went home to his father, his father said, yes, yes, so, but on the condition, you must sit down with us at the table and you must eat the meat with us. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Okay? So his father is, you know, asking him to act impiously. So then he said, I cannot do that. You know, which is going to create enemies. And so he went back to Prabhupada and said, they've asked me to eat meat and I cannot do that. He said, oh, so, you know, just don't go back, you know, stay. So, you know, Prahlad was put, so then, you know, it creates a rift, an inimical, or even relatives can become straight out enemies, you know, friends and relatives like that. So that's the nature of this world. You know, he's just a devotee. His father's asked him to come home. You will do business and you're my son. You know, why not? You take over the business, you know. Yeah, sounds good. But you must eat meat. So, and of course in America, they're big beef eaters. You know, meat usually means that they pride themselves. You know, just like I saw on the news, they had a summit with, I think it might have been the from another country. But, you know, they had a meal and they're very proud that it was beef, you know. That's what they do. You know, we have our big brands, or so much beef, we, you know, because it's a sign of a very opulent, materialistic nation. If you can, you know, we're not eating rabbits, you know, with myxomatosis or things like that, you know, you've got some beef. So, And we're also saying before how sometimes, you know, as a priest, I'm asked to do pious activities, you know, to worship Durga and you know, and Ganesh. It's pious, you know, but I don't want to do that. We don't want to create an enemy there, you know. And Prabhupada was asked, you come into our temple and offer respects to Durga. You know, it's a pious activity. But he doesn't want to create enemies there either. So,
In the case of devotees, this is a very common occurrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Durga Puja, mm. or all the family tradition of other pujas and all. What should be the more house in the situation?
Well, we did spend about 45 minutes on that question. Right? So it's a good question.
Go home and listen.
You catch up with some of these early bird students a bit later on. But I'll give you this, the one just very briefly. Yeah. Prabhupada, for instance, showed us that, you know, we don't want to create an inimical situation. So we try where possible, and this is exactly the instruction here. Exactly what Prabhupada did. We try to do it in such a way that what they're asking us to do, we do it in such a way that it fulfills exactly what we're allowed to do on the path of pure devotional service. But in their mind, it appears that we've done what they've asked us to do. And the example of that is that, you know, as I said, sometimes people ask me to put different deities on my altar and I just do it. But I'm just, you know, when I do my worship, I'm just looking at Krishna. And, you know, to them, I'm worshipping their deity, but in my, I know that I'm just worshipping Krishna and offering the prasad to the, all their different deities and what have you like that. You know, if they're different demigods. So, you know, they're perfectly satisfied. No one's ever questioned me. You know, they're quite happy, very happy. If I said no, you know, putting that little statue on my altar, you know, that'd be very offended. You know, this is something that's been in their generation for thousands of years, hundreds of years, you know. Even if it's 2 years, they'd be offended. See? They'd never ask me back. I can guarantee you, they'd never ask me back. They wouldn't ask people from this back. So, and Prabhupada being asked to go into a temple and, you know, offer respects to Durga, he went in, offered his respects. It appeared he was offering his respects to Durga, but actually he said, in front of the devotee is always the spiritual master, on our left is always our Lord, Radha Krishna, and then the others and the demigods on the right. So he had, so he did that with his right side towards Durga Devi, because he was offering his respects to the Krishna and his spiritual master, and then, you know, to Durga Devi as, you know, the servant of that. So there was no offence, but in their mind, they just see him offering respects to Durga Devi. He hasn't created enemies like that. So very intelligent. Right? So our preaching should be like that, in that mood. Not that we just say, you know, not that we willy-nilly say, well, you know, I'm a devotee of ISKCON. I don't care whether you don't like me. You don't like ISKCON. I'm not doing that. I'm not going there. You know, I don't have to do that. You know, I'm above that. You know, you're karmic. You know, you're jnani. You know, whatever like that. So, but the nature of this world is, you can't be a devotee and just think that, you know, yes, I'm just going to, you know, with my family at the business, relatives, that no one's ever going to, you know, oblige me to do something that I really don't want to do. You know, what do I do? Do I just, oh, I'll just make an enemy, I just won't see them anymore, I don't care if they hate me. We have to be very intelligent. So that's the nature of this purport here. What's that?
One basic question.
Mm. Because they've come to offer their obeisances to Krishna as we have. It's mentioned in Shastra that the, you know, the demigods come to offer their pranams to Krishna. They've come to worship Krishna, and they've come to see his worship, and they've come to stand in the aarti and so many things.
But why do we have our left hand side towards Krishna?
Rather than our right side,
yeah.
I haven't seen that. I mean, maybe they're closer to our heart. I say that to the brides, you know. They say, "What? What? You know, why do I have to sit on the left side of my husband? Oh, he's closer to your heart now." Oh, I like it. You know, what's that?
Heart on the left side.
Heart is on the left side. Yes. Someone on our left, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I haven't seen why specifically, you know, it's like, you know, the colours, you know, why do we not go before the deity with, you know, wearing red or blue? You know, Prabhupada said, you know.
Why, even that also I have a question, why can't we go wearing red colour before the deities?
Yeah. Prabhupada, you know, he answered that, you know, these things are in Shastra, you know, so you just follow them, you know.
Even blue colour we can go, Prabhupada.
Yeah, red and blue, yeah, red and blue. Yeah. I haven't seen, and you know, that's the only answer I've ever seen Prabhupada speak on that, you know, that it's in Shastra, you should accept it. You know, red is tama, blue is tama, red is rajas, you know, they're more rajasic and sattvic colours, you know, I mean, this is what we, you know, it's a, an educated guess, I guess. We're allowed to do that to some degree, you know, to some degree. So I'm taking a little bit of license here, but you know, they're rajas and tamas, whereas you know the deities are, you know, and they are the colours that, you know, people may who are in rajas and tamas may wear when they're worshipping, you know, deities of rajas and tamas. They're also, you know, so whereas, you know, Vishnu is very sattvic or sattvic. You know, if you look at a lot of the different rules and regulations of deity worship, we never do anything which detracts attention from the deity to ourselves. We should not accept gifts or praise in front of the deities. You know, we're not trying to, you know, they're the focus of attention, and none of it should come to us in the form of praise, attention, that we're wearing brighter colours than the deities, you know, oh, look at me, look at that one in the red dress, you know. As, you know, our attention, we should assist people that their attention should be to the deities. So, I mean, you know, these will all be part of it to some degree. You don't let people touch your feet, you know. One of the things in the wedding is always have to tell them, you know, when they touch the feet of the parents, we you know, or even the brahmana, you know, we have to go outside. Can't tell them the deity, right? Yeah, things like that. So, you know, there are, it'd be in that line. You know. But, you know, you know, for devotees, you know, if they've got a little bit of blue and red, you know, and they're humbly going in there, and, you know, they're a nice devotional mood, you know, and Krishna's going to say, "That's a blue hat." Oh, it's more aqua, Krishna. It's a little green. No, that's blue. You know, you know, it's, but you know, bright red. You know, just head to toe. You know, just really standing out too much. That's probably more in the mood of what's, you know, saying. So. You know, put a couple of stripes, you've got a red jump, put a couple of stripes here and there. But if you if you've got something red or blue on, just be very humble and you'll probably be okay. Yeah. So so one has to kushalina. One should be very, very expert. Is that good? Kushalina, by acting, here it says, Kushalina, by acting piously. And Prabhupada says, devotional service is the best of all pious activities. Huh? And Prabhupada says, you know, he says the word kushalina is very important. One should live in the world, the material world, very expertly. So it's not as if he's saying the word kushalina necessarily means very expertly, but by acting piously, and in brackets, Prabhupada saying devotional service is the best of all pious activities. So, very expertly in that sense means that we're asked to do something as devotees that actually, you know, we're feeling obliged to do something that, but it's not what we do as a devotee, you know. We don't engage in karma kanda, jnana kanda. So, and yet we're being obliged to do that. So then, how do we deal with that? We act in a very good way. Certainly not in a harmful way. You know, we wouldn't sort of hit someone over the head with a big club. You know, I'm not doing it. Bam. You know, hit him over the head of the club. That's impious. You see? So we have to, you know, we find a really good activity, an auspicious activity to somehow counteract what we're obliged to do. And we find a good activity particularly that's within the realms of devotional service. And that. So we don't Because we're not obliged to do something, we shouldn't do something bad. We should do something good, but even in doing something good, it actually should be within the realms of pure devotional service. And that's very expert. So, but somehow we're obliged. It's almost like we can't get out of it. It's like Prabhupada being asked to come in and offer obeisances to Durga, you know. And you sort of, you know, you don't want to upset all the preaching and alienate people that have all of a sudden embraced the Western Hare Krishnas and they're touching their feet and, you know, to undo all of that, you know, like that. And so then, you know, as mentioned by Vishwanath Chakrabarti at the core, and you know, Prabhupada, that says an exalted devotee like Prahlad Maharaj is Jivan Mukta. He is liberated even in this very life in the material body. So his karmas are all destroyed. You know, he's a liberated person now. As Vishwanath Chakrabarti at the core says, you know, in his previous life, all his karmas are already destroyed. So then Vishwanath Chakrabarti the course says, by pious acts, Prarabdha sins will be exhausted. By experience of enjoyment, the Prarabdha punyas of you know pious acts will be exhausted. So as a king, he will be obliged to accept what they consider material enjoyment. You know, if he's the king ruling materialists, they're going to make him, you know, you must enjoy. Daily we'll be bringing from morning to night so many servants, you know, we want you to enjoy, you're our king. Like that. So will he be, implicated in karma? No. It has nothing to do with his karma. That his karma is already destroyed, nor would be developing any new karma. But by accepting the enjoyment that comes and accepting that in such a way that it is conducive to his service to Krishna, the personality of Godhead, then there's no material reaction to it. Yeah. You know, the material reaction will be exhausted, you know, burnt up. There's no material reaction. And then there's some things, because they're materialist, there may be some impious things that he may be obliged to do. But by those things being done in a way which is conducive to pure devotional service, there's no reaction to those impious activities already. Already, you know, the result of his karma is already burned up. But he certainly won't be creating any more, you know, by, you know, in other words, by enjoying material life and engaging in pious and impious activities, he certainly won't be creating the seed of attachment, you know, to this world, you know, which is the beginning, the subtle beginning of, you know, fructifying like that. So, you know, there's no karmic reaction, even in the beginning, even in the most subtle form, which produces a proclivity to enjoy this world, an attachment to fulfill that proclivity, desires that arise from that proclivity, and then material activities. You know, none of that will happen, even though he's enjoying. If we enjoy, all of those things can happen. But Lord Nrisimhadeva is saying that, you know, keeping yourself in pure devotional service, then even you're enjoying, because as the king, they're wanting you to enjoy material life, but there'll be no material action at all. No material, not in the even in the most subtle form that enters your heart. You know, Prahlad Maharaj himself, he's already stated that devotional service, you know, burns up even the very desire, you know, to engage in material activities. That is already stated. So he's saying that a devotee should expertly manage, Prabhupada is saying a devotee should expertly manage to think always of the Supreme Lord so that the reactions of suffering cannot touch him. This is the expert management of papa, punya, pious and impious activities. Papa and punya. Right? Papa is impious and punya is pious activities. We're obliged to perform different pious and impious activities in this world. We have to manage that very expertly. And the way to do that is to always think of the Lord and to think of how the activities of papa and punya can be engaged in such a way that it is pure devotional service, that we don't step out of the activities of pure devotional service. So, in one sense, you know, it's not necessarily saying, you know, engage in the pious activities, engage in the impious activities, and try and burn up the karma. It's saying that, as Prabhupada says, that, you know, by acting piously, devotional service is the best of all pious activities. Saying that just stay on the platform of pure devotional service, just leave those pious and impious activities aside. You don't have to perform them. That, you know, there are by the arrangement of the Lord and by the nature of devotional service itself, you can just do devotional activities. You may think that you're obliged to do this and that, but you can actually just do devotional activities and not go there. But this world is only full of activities called punya or papa.
Can we apply that same to going to the in the workplace, in the material world? Because every time that question is that we have to go to the material world, we've been trapped with so many elements.
Yeah.
So can we apply that same thing to that question that people also ask, how can I maintain my
emotional
service when I'm going and working in the
office,
corporate world,
or definitely. Everywhere. As long as we're in the material world.
So that it's, see, we are doing
when you go to the material
home.
World, not just at your work.
When you're doing devotional service at home.
Yeah.
And then that means when you go to the workplace.
Yes.
We are exposed to all these elements. So what is the key thing that we are, one is we just do our duty there and not get, so what's the key element there, not to get entangled?
Yeah, the key element is that we just only perform, we're always thinking of Krishna, and we're getting intelligence from Krishna, and we're always wanting to serve Krishna, and we understand that at this situation, it's almost like I'm being asked not to serve Krishna, but then, you know, we just keep thinking of Krishna and how we'd like to serve him, an alternative activity, which is devotional service itself, we will perform that, and yet it satisfies what they want us to do in the realm of pious or impious activity. So literally, we find an alternative to what a person is wanting us to do, which appears to be what they're, from their side, it looks like, oh, this person is doing what I want them to do. From our side, we're only doing devotional service. So we never come to the platform of piety or impiety or an enjoyer.
I think Prabhupada also mentioned somewhere in Bhagavad Gita's purport that externally devotee might seem to be working as the same as another materialist.
Mm.
But it's actually the devotional service you might as well.
Mm. That's right.
So what's
yeah.
the key element for a devotee to understand that even at work you're doing devotional service? What's the key element?
The key element is that we don't want to make enemies. So we have to be expert that we're somehow satisfying people in this world, and yet who wants us to do something other than devotional service. So we're satisfying them, and yet we only ever do devotional service. That's the expertise. From their point of view, they're satisfied, and they're wanting to do us almost do something, anything but Hare Krishna. And from our point of view, we're not going to do anything but our devotional service. And yet both, so we're completely satisfied and they're completely satisfied. That's very expert.
This is thinking of some an example last night. I did some driving part time, like Uber driving. So usually I play just some kirtan, not like cool ones. Kirtans, but it's just like Mahdi and stuff like that. But then sometimes, especially late at night, someone will be like, oh, do you have a cable so I can plug my music in? And so they want to play their music, and I'm like, oh, I won't. So I let someone last night put on their music, and then they put it out loud, and it's like just some kind of dance kind of music or something.
Mm.
And I was like, well, I just trying to keep chanting in my head.
No.
And then, they were happy, like they enjoyed the ride, and then they left up, and so I could put my music back on again, and it's like, I wasn't.
You know what I would have done?
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't have a cable.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have the cable.
Yeah.
I go, you have a cable? No, I don't have one of them cables.
Mm.
I would just say, but look, next time you come, bring your cable. the likelihood of them ever jumping in the car with you again is very slim. But I would have said straight out, no, I don't have, even if I had the cable. I don't have the cable. So, I'd love to, mate. Love to put your music on, that headbanging stuff, love it, yeah. Just don't have the cable with me, No. Oh, God. That's what I would have done. And they're thinking, oh, a real great guy, he would have let me play his music, but just didn't have the cable. Nice guy, I do a lot of things like that, ceremonies. People say, oh, Kangu, can you do this? You got any of this in the can? Oh, no, I usually do, but I just don't have it today. If I don't want to do it, I just don't do it. But I let them think that I would. That's the easiest way. It's, we're not obliged. But, the worst case scenario is say, yes, I've got a cable here, but I'm not plugging it in. That we don't want to do. Yeah. I mean, I always travel with a shalika. So, it's like Krishna's got a headache. And the gopis said, Krishna's got a headache, we give the dust, we're going to hell. That's okay, I'll go to hell and Krishna won't have a headache. Okay, I'm telling a lie. all right, okay, I'll go to hell. But Krishna's not going to have to listen to that. You know. And, you know, Yudhishthira, he wouldn't tell a lie. Krishna wasn't very happy with him. I want you to tell a lie. I need you to tell a lie. Not telling a lie. You know, it's impious. There's nothing more pious than actually pleasing the Lord in devotional service. You know. That is the most pious, actually. You know, if you know that Krishna is happy, no, we don't want to make Krishna unhappy.
Why is it that Yudhishthira Maharaj did not know that rule, that obeying Krishna is the highest religious principle?
He's you know, doing that to these pastimes to give us instruction here. But it also helps us to understand the difference between Arjuna and Yudhishthira. And therefore Prabhupada says in one lecture that, you know, the Gita, Prabhupada says, amongst the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. So we understand that, you know, he's the best amongst the Pandavas. So that helped us to understand, why is Arjuna? Why doesn't he say Yudhishthira? And that is because when Krishna had given the instruction, then Arjuna didn't hesitate after whatever Krishna said. Kill Karna now. Oh, but, you know, he's unarmed. No, kill him. It's okay. Okay. So Yudhishthira hesitated even after the Bhagavad Gita, but Arjuna didn't. So, you know, these pastimes also help us to, you know, understand the glories of one devotee, their service, you know.
Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna. You want to know, what was that?
Just from the 15 minutes of last time.
Oh, yes, 15.
Yes,
is it your birthday?
That's when this
is up. So towards the end?
No,
right now.
Just going to be 1 o'clock.
Okay. Alright. Yeah, okay. Alright, yeah.